Thank you for joining us. The Dacres Report is on the air, ready to defend your religious freedom, your parental rights, and other civil liberties. And now, with the latest information, is your host, the president of the Pacific Justice Institute, Brad Dacres.
What would you do if you found out that your school's sex ed curriculum was being administered and you didn't know about it? And then when you did try to find out, you weren't able to look at it. And then when you finally found out, you found out it had material that was clearly not age appropriate. Well, we're going to talk about this subject in the second half of the show, what we did about this in terms of a specific school district that actually tried to pull this off, and how we stood up to that with the outrage of so many parents backing us, objecting to what they were doing. So I think you'll find that really interesting, real eye-opening, and we're going to talk about it in the second half of our show with one of our attorneys. But the first half of the show, we're blessed to have with us on the show Tony Perkins. He's the head of the Family Research Council. It's a fantastic organization. FRC's has done tremendous work empowering people across the country, churches, pastors in particular across the country, to get involved. And he's been on Fox News and other news programs numerous times, so I know you're probably very familiar with him. Thank you so much, Tony, for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, Brad, it's great to be on the program with you, and I just want to say thank you for all the great work that you do defending the freedoms of Christians and others in the courts. And a lot of times you don't even have to go to court because you simply stand up with them and you call out those who are trying to deprive them of their freedoms and their rights. And so I just want to say thanks for the great work that you do.
Well, thank you. It's feelings mutual. So now we have some serious challenges taking place dealing with the sanctity of human life, specifically abortions, on a national scale. And I know one of the problems that we've had in states like California is we have, you know, a mandate that says insurance companies have to provide for abortions, whether you like it or not. And yet this has some real pushback from Congress on a federal level and in our courts. Give me some background as you see it, where this is headed.
Well, first off, this really wouldn't have been a problem had we had someone in the White House who respected the law. I mean, what California is doing is contrary to what federal law states and the provisions and protections that are there. But under the previous regime, the Department of Health and Human Services failed to act on the law. And that's why we have this really dilemma for many in California. Now, this is obviously being challenged in the courts. I know you're a part of that, and we're a part of some of the attorneys that are working on this, and the churches in particular. Jack Hibbs, a good friend of mine, Jim Garlow, pastors in our Watchman Network. But we're also working with the new administration to try to rectify this to the degree that they can. And, of course, now we see California responding, saying, well, we don't care what the federal government does. We're still going to force people to do this. But we're working very aggressively to get this administration. I've spoken with the president about this. I met at length with the vice president just a few weeks ago to discuss the issue of religious liberty, which should be covered, or which rather should cover this, if in fact our as acknowledging and respecting the freedom of religion that churches and other individuals have in this country.
Right. Now, how do those two connect? Explain that.
Well, for instance, let's take a very prominent case, the Hobby Lobby, which is not too much dissimilar from the case there in California with the government, the state government, forcing churches to fund abortions. Hobby Lobby case, which went all the way to the Supreme Court and was decided on behalf of Hobby Lobby, based on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. They objected not to all contraception that was mandated by the Department of Health and Human Services, but just about four of, I think, 21 different types, and these four were could act as abortifacients. And so they said, look, this violates our religious beliefs about the sanctity of human life, went all the way to Supreme Court, and as you know, they prevailed in that case. It's a recognition that government should not coerce, force, under penalty of law, people to violate their faith. That's not freedom.
Right.
And what California is doing, I mean, if you think about this, they are forcing, and I know you have, and your listeners have, I'm sure, have heard it from you, but what they are doing, they're forcing a church to literally take the tithes and the offerings that come in to do the work of the Lord to fund abortions through the health care plans that they're required to purchase.
Yeah. And I tell you, Tony, this seems like such a no-brainer in terms of just the basic concept of religious freedom. But to tell people, to tell religious institutions that they have to pay and fund things that are totally against what they believe and their convictions and their understanding of Scripture is just unthinkable when you talk about the purpose of the Free Exercise Clause to begin with, much less the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And many states have actually adopted the Religious Freedom Restoration Act on a statewide level. Unfortunately, California isn't one of them. But even that aside, this still should be struck down by the courts as a violation of religious freedom. And I think that it would have a very good chance. I think in the end it will prevail,
right?
Especially with Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. I think he's going to do a fantastic job, and I'm looking forward to some other replacements, as I'm sure you are. But as we move forward with this, we're looking at some major reform, not just dealing with this issue, but dealing much broader with many kinds of issues that would cover under the cloak of religious freedom.
Right, and it's very important to clearly state what we're talking about here. We talk about religious freedom, the rights of conscience and what people believe. We're talking about well-established, deeply held Orthodox beliefs. And that's one of the things you mentioned, Neil Gorsuch, when he was on the Tenth Circuit. You know, he oversaw some of these cases. And, you know, people might claim that they're doing this in the name of their religious beliefs. Well, if there's not a long-standing tradition, it's kind of hard to defend that. So we're not talking about people who are trying to do things that are nefarious or those things which are antisocial and then cloak it under religion. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about beliefs that have been long-standing in the religious tradition, and we speak specifically about Christianity. And just because a court has ruled one way on a particular issue, and that's what it is in most cases, those religious beliefs then become targeted, and that is wrong.
Right.
Because these beliefs long preceded the courts and these judges who have made these decisions, and you cannot, not in a free society, not in a society that's prosperous, you cannot quarantine faith to the four walls of the church. If you do, you will kill all our freedoms, because this one, the founders understood it was the cornerstone for all other freedoms.
Yeah, and we're also talking not about a absolutist, extremist legislation. We're talking about legislation that's protecting the free exercise of religion, but would still recognize those circumstances when there's a compelling state interest.
Right.
And the law is narrowly tailored for that compelling state interest. I think it's being approached in a proper way. What's your feedback from the president so far? I know you're not, a distant in terms of your relationship with this administration, like the prior administration. My take is that they are listening to you specifically and to those like you who have these concerns.
I think that this president understands the importance of religious freedom, if for no other reason that it's important to evangelicals and others, Catholics, others who take their faith very serious, what we would call social conservatives, those who literally live their lives according to their faith. Their faith influences what they do, not just on Sundays, but every day of the week. And so the president is sympathetic and understanding of that. And my conversation with him a few weeks ago, that he said, "Look, there were two things we talked about. One was the repeal of Obamacare, that it was going to be pro-life, that the provisions that were in the replace plan would be pro-life, and that Planned Parenthood would be defunded. He made that very clear. And then we talked about religious freedom. He talked about the Johnson Amendment, which he has one of the few policy issues that he has spoken about from the very beginning of his campaign in the general election. And he said, that's going to happen. And I look for that to happen this year. We also talked about the, I talked to him about the executive order on religious freedom that is necessary at the federal level to address issues like we're talking about in California. And it's happening in the military. It's happening across our society, where government was really weaponized under the Obama administration to penalize and to punish those who sought to live their lives according to their orthodox faith.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Tony, I can't tell you how many examples, just in the military alone, that I took notice of dealing with persecuting Christians overtly because of their Christian faith, from the top all the way down. And it was 8 years of tragedy and disaster when it comes to religious freedom in the military. I never saw, would have imagined, so much degeneration of religious freedom and respect for faith in the military than we saw during that 8 year period of time. But your understanding, though, is what you've seen President Trump do so far, is that he's definitely moving this back in a different direction, restoring and respecting people of faith and faith itself in the military and other branches of government in a matter that is respectful of faith in accordance with the First Amendment, right?
Well, it's a process. This president clearly is not hostile to religious freedom and the expression of that of those religious beliefs, as we saw in the previous administration. But my point with this administration, both directly and indirectly from the very beginning of this administration, has been that these issues are not going to self-correct. Just because we had an election and we now have a president who respects the Constitution doesn't necessarily mean that these things will be fixed. It's going to require intentionality. And so that's one of the reasons we've been advocating, for certain people in various cabinet positions, is that they're going to have to be intentional of restoring these freedoms. So
right.
I don't want to give anybody the impression the problem is solved, that it's over. I'm saying we have the opportunity to solve these problems. And, of course, this president's faced with a multitude of problems, given the mess that he was left by his predecessor,
right,
both on the domestic and foreign policy front. But we have the chance. We just have to be diligent to follow through and make sure it gets done.
Yeah, Tony, I really appreciate your time with us. And folks out there, if you want to keep up with what Tony is doing and the Family Research Council, Tony, where do they go?
FRC.org, FRC.org, and they can find out all they need to know.
Tony, keep up the great work, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you, Brad.
Pacific Justice Institute is here for you, defending faith, family, and freedom, all without charge. We are almost entirely supported by concerned individuals like you who believe in our work. We invite you to prayerfully consider joining our support team by making either a one-time donation or becoming a monthly financial support partner. Visit our website at pji.org and join our team today.
And folks, if you decide to support the Pacific Justice Institute, become a part of our team, we have a special gift. There's a book we want to give you an appreciation for your support. It's about health, happiness, and hormones, by Dr. Hotze. It's an excellent book. He's a specialist in helping people, particularly in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond, get their lives back, get their energy back, get their health back, and balance their hormones. And it's an eye-opening book. It's an empowering book, and that's why I liked it so much. I read it, and I thought this was an excellent book to give to people. They need to read it. It was very inspirational to me to find out how many things I can do as I get older, believe it or not, to help take care of myself and to improve my quality of life. This book, this hardbound book, is our gift to you if you choose to support the Pacific Justice Institute on either a one-time or monthly basis. If you choose to do that, just go to our website. It's pacificjustice.org, PacificJustice.org, PacificJustice.org. Now, we have with us on the line one of our attorneys who heads up our San Francisco Bay Area office, Ray Hackey. Ray, you've been involved in dealing with a number of issues there in the Bay Area, but one that really came to mind that I thought we should cover and let people know about is dealing with this new sex ed curriculum that a school district there in the San Francisco Bay Area decided to try to sneak in and push upon families and children. What happened, and what was this curriculum about? Why were people concerned about it?
Well, a lot of people were concerned about it. To put it the way one parent who attended the school board meeting put it, they were presenting porn to a PG-13 audience. Now, obviously, that was being metaphorical, but the contents of the curriculum were pretty extreme, pretty graphic. And unfortunately, the curriculum wasn't made available to parents on a widespread basis over an extended period of time to give enough of them an opportunity to review it and to voice their opinions on it. Basically, it was only available during the school day during the hours that the district office was open.
But Ray, wait a second here. Only during the school day? So if you have two parents that are working, they won't have a chance to look at it, right?
And even if they could take the day off, I mean, there's 18,000 students in this particular school district. So, you know, multiply that. Let's say each of them has two parents. You're going to have 36,000 parents trying to get hold of maybe one or two copies of that curriculum. So nobody's really having an opportunity to review it. And the law actually requires that it be made available for parents to review. And you know, the law recognizes that parents are in the best position to determine what is age appropriate for their kids. And age appropriate is what the law requires.
Right. And we're talking about sex ed curriculum. And that varies all across the country. I understand that. And yet in the San Francisco Bay Area, this kind of curriculum that was being offered and to be distributed, the sex ed curriculum, I mean, it actually had some material that you would normally not be allowed to present to someone under the age of 18, except in this sex ed curriculum context, right?
Right. I mean, these are the sort of things that you would see or hear about in R-rated movies, things that a number of the parents who came out of the meeting, in fact, the overwhelming majority, did not want their kids to see or hear. You know, they just felt very, very strongly that, you know, like I said, it needs to be age appropriate. And this was, you know, this curriculum was aimed at middle school students, and this was way above their heads in terms of, I mean, maybe they know it just from a street level, but these are the sorts of things that, you know, parents need to be able to talk about with their kids and not necessarily entrust it to the schools.
Well, and some of these things they're talking about are things that you don't really even need to discuss or with someone until they're ready for marriage. I mean, we're not talking about the basics of the birds and the bees. We're talking about all kinds of behaviors, which I got to keep this clean for the show, but behaviors that a young person would not even necessarily be talking about with their peers. It's things that are very alarming, very concerning, that I think should be looked at very seriously. And these parents looked at it very seriously, and they decided to stand up to it. What happened then? What happened once the parents got involved?
Well, once the parents got involved, they packed that meeting. It was, I mean, there were people spilling out of the doors, and you know, there was about 2 hours worth of commentary. I mean, everybody was limited to about 1 minute unless they were willing to give their time to someone else. People had to like scramble to find seats. It was standing room only, or some of them had to like find makeshift seats out of piano benches and that sort of thing. And you know, there were so many people who showed up to talk about this. But the overwhelming majority of people in attendance were outraged. Not only that, you know, the curriculum wasn't really made available for them to review, but because the ACLU was behind it, they seemed to want to really ram this through. And also because the school district had actually said that it was they were going to make it difficult for kids to opt out, at least from different portions of it, because they felt that the district felt that so many portions of the curriculum were intertwined that if they missed one day that a parent felt was inappropriate, that they'd be lost on other days.
What they did, Ray, is they intertwined this sex ed curriculum with other material to make it really difficult. And they knew darn well what they were doing to make it very difficult for parents to be able to opt their children out, which parents are allowed to do via state law. And yet this was being attempted to be thwarted by interweaving it with other materials. Now, I noticed you mentioned the ACLU was on the other side. This is really disturbing. They're supposed to be for civil rights, right? They're supposed to be for civil liberties and notice and due process and all. But what was their take on this? How could they have the audacity to stand on the side of the government school district in trying to hide material, try to prevent parents from being aware of what's going on? Well, what was their agenda?
Well, their agenda was that they were behind the passage of the California Healthy Youth Act, which is what, you know, this curriculum was approved by the ACLU. And so the ACLU has gone around and they'd actually sent a letter to the school district making a veiled threat, you know, talking about how in Fresno they'd won a case and gotten attorney's fees requiring a school district down there to implement this curriculum. And so they didn't necessarily say, we're going to sue you if you don't do this, but the implication was there that, you know, we've taken districts to court and won. Don't let the same thing happen to you. Just basically cave. And so they were because they were a driving force behind this legislation. They tried to, you know, ram it through, and perhaps the school district felt, you know, the need to cave into them. And thankfully, at least enough members of the school board had enough backbone and enough good sense to listen to the parents involved and vote against it.
Now, Ray, there was more than just parents involved. We at Pacific Justice Institute were involved as well. In fact, you specifically were involved. Please describe the role that we played so people can understand what we can do for them and their community if they face a similar situation.
A parent contacted the Pacific Justice Institute, and we not only wrote a letter to the school board explaining what the law is and why they should hold off on adopting the curriculum, I went personally to the school board meeting in Sunnyvale to actually advocate for it, or advocate that the school district hold off on adopting the curriculum.
Right.
And, you know, we'd be willing to do that for other school districts around the state as well.
Well, and around the country.
And around the country, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We have a volunteer affiliate attorneys all across the United States, and we're willing to stand up to school districts, folks, when they cross the line and decide to promote something that violates the rights of parents, including outrageous sex ed curriculum like this was. What happened with the school board? What did they do after you made your presentation? They heard from the parents. They had the big bully, the ACLU, there waving their sword of intimidation. But what did they decide to do in the end?
Ultimately, the school board voted against adopting it. Well, it was a 5-member school board. 1 member abstained. So there needed to be 3 people to vote to approve it, and there were 2 who voted against it. So with the 1 abstaining, they didn't get the majority they needed to adopt the curriculum, and so that's a victory.
Yeah.
We convinced the school board to not adopt that curriculum, and I think the Cupertino Union School District made the right call.
Yeah, and I know we're going to be watching that school district very closely as we move ahead to help prevent them from adopting this or similar outrageous curriculum in violation of the rights of parents in the future. Ray, thank you very much for the work that you're doing as an attorney for the Pacific Justice Institute. You're doing a fantastic job in managing our Bay Area office, and keep up the great work. Thanks for this wonderful update.
Thank you, Brad.
Well, folks, if you're in a similar situation somewhere in the country, don't get frustrated. Don't get upset. contact the Pacific Justice Institute. You can get our resource materials. You can also support our work. And you can also let us know about your situation so that we can provide you the kind of assistance and possible representation that you need to defend your rights. Just go to our website, pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org.
Pacific Justice Institute invites you to join in the fight to protect our religious liberties. Consider volunteering in one of our California offices or become an affiliate attorney. Visit our website to find out more, pji.org. And while you're there, subscribe to our Legal Insider to keep updated on all of our current cases. Pacific Justice Institute. Together, we can make a difference.
So, folks, there you have it. It's our God-given freedoms we're talking about. Now, let's choose to keep them. I'm Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening in today. To find out more about the Pacific Justice Institute or the Dacus Report, call 916-857-6900 or log on to pacificjustice.org.